circumvent what he set up.
Now, he didn't set that up, though. I mean, probably...
With Kathy, he set that up with Kathy. Now, I want to show you something. No, that's all right. I don't need that. I wanted to show you something.
Oh, okay.
And we used to play next door at the Manhattan Club on the second floor. And when we took in the mission, we would come down, go out the back door, and go right in the mirror door. You see, we didn't have no black patrons. They only had the black band. The only time the blacks would be at Sunday midnight, seeing there wasn't no...
Right.
It was midnight and midnight round.
Right.
See, they had a place called Phil's Place in the New Pen. They only got it for the midnight thing because it wasn't serving with up there on Sunday.
Yeah.
I remember his band. I remember when the dude's band played Flower Garden.
Where was that place?
A place called Flower Garden. That's when Bell and Pernell Gibson, the session, and Earl Littlejohn played bass with in 1931.
Okay. So it was a white
bass. Yeah, like bass, Earl Littlejohn. They didn't finish high school.
Right.
The bass was so much in demand, they walked right into John. Boswell. And Ray Brown and Carl Pruitt was the master over because he was up here with Cootie Williams' band, got around New York to war camp. When he come out, he went to Columbia University and got his degree. But he was the Bruce.
Right.
You know, he offered George Shearer guys.
Yeah.
And they didn't miss him because he was a swimmer.
Okay.
In school. And we were just like that. I remember he worked with me with Alice Brooks out the nut house.
And what about Les Pruitt?
Well, the alcohol got to him. Les started out on the violin, then he went to Saxon and could read.
Yeah.
Him and Andy left here in 33 and went to Buffalo. Right now, I'll give the name of it. Les came back, Andy went in the mill, because he was playing banjo. When he switched to guitar, he was in love with him, but he went in the mill. But Les came on back. Les was an excellent musician. We played in Shelley High School band. And sometime I'll tell you about, there was a boy, you hear this boy plays the alto, white boy.
David Sandberg.
No, give a lot of credit to playing jazz. He records Woods.
Phil Woods, right, with Billy Carter.
Yeah, there was a boy that was a PG postgraduate student, used to come back in 1931, named Harry Fellow, was doing the same thing. I had a music teacher in 1927, Miss Donovan of Moore, an open mind, graduated of Connecticut. What Mary McCartney was, she was doing that, and used to sit on the side of the desk and say, I don't go for all this stuff, sure. That's elucidated. I used to play the drums to accompany the kids down for assembly in the hall at Moorhead School. But I was the third drummer in line. There's a guy, he still might be living, Henry Hurd. About 5 years, he was the first. Then it was Melvin Kerr, and then came my turn.
Right
from there, I left there. We moved back out the hill, and I went into Hill and Hill. And I had a civics teacher in 1929, Jewish, Fanny Alford. And she, I didn't cope because I hadn't been out of color school for 2 years. And there's a boy named James Smith, he's still there. He said, man, you play drums, why don't you get in? And I went into the band. And when I left there, I went to Shelley and played in the band there. Now, Andrew Penn, he was a strong one playing bass. When they evaluated the band, they put them back in band number two. They thought they wasn't qualified to play in it, but I stayed.
You stayed up there.
Jody Harris was on baritone. They took about 7 black dudes out of the band. Jimmy Young, who was older, he came here to to get the education. He was about 20 years old when he graduated Chimney
High School.
But he was good enough yet.
Right.
And he went up to Buffalo, the war came. He was in the Army under the GI Bill. He was teaching English.
Right.
In Buffalo school system.
When like just before, like 38, 39, and 40, where did you pay your dues, or where was the headquarters, union office?
Down at the Court of Calanthians on Center Avenue.
The who?
Court of Calanthians.
Court of Calanthians?
Yeah, that was our headquarters. But now, you'd pay your dues, and then Melendez, who lived out on Southwest, would record this stuff. Melendez was one of the toasty individuals.
Okay.
He didn't want me, didn't want you running out to his house.
Right.
And the union was at a low ebb. The only time they, when they wanted to get a traveling card or a transfer.
Right.
It was down.
Yeah.
And then in 35, Claude Fisher, we said we'll reorganize.
Yeah.
Then when we started the second wave.
Yeah.
After Fritz Hawkins left, the union went to pop.
Yeah.
That's when Fitch and all of them was in there. That's how Sunset Royal come in here and squat.
Because if
Fitch drinking that whiskey and telling him, and it wasn't nobody to challenge him. But we got that stuff together and made
some sense out of it. Yeah.
Well.
Then in 40, you say 43, 42 or 43 was when the Musicians Club...
42, yeah. Now, I'm going to have one over like half of the bricks, one length.
Okay, so the Musicians Club was established then, after the time.
It first began in 1930. The idea was in 1939. I just made my audition over on Southside, and I had to report to the class to tell Prez that I'd passed my audition to get in the WBA band. That's when one of the members, a fellow named Charlie Robinson, who was an elf, they had already amended their cut to sell whiskey, and he told Prez about it. Prez said, well, I'll look into it.
Okay.
And Prez went down and talked to Gus and them. That building was empty. It used to be the Paramount Club.
Right.
Before that, it was Harry Collins Club.
Collins Inn, yeah.
So they got it together, and they filed for a license.
Right.
Margiotta was known to set up Constitution for them kind of club. And then Leroy Brown and then moved in and started running out of our joint.
What name did you just say would set up the Constitution?
Margiotta. He was an attorney. And he had a reputation for being able to...
I'll have to look.
Margiotta.
I'll have to look on that envelope that Carl gave me because, like I said, this thing was dated 1942.
Yeah, it was the Constitutional Bylaws. We got cited two or three times in politics. It was a guy from the Keith Court. Bo Henley was the bartender. He was bringing a lot of them girls from the Keith Court.
Over there, right.
Yeah. And then the police was squad because they didn't like that much up there. And another thing, they made Leroy Brown run out from under his hat down the hall of the church, cruising them girls up there. See, this is why I don't want to be a part of nothing, because I was there, and you're the only one who actually knows what happened. Al Johnson, he borrowed a whole lot of money during the war time. After him and Fred Staten flopped around, they got the concession to run the kitchen at the music room. Anyway, then his family moved out to L.A. He borrowed up a whole lot of money from the union so he could go out there and never pay.
And never get it back. Well, when did Mr. Williams take over the kitchen? Because that's the only one I can recall.
Williams was the guy who had the Georgian catering.
Okay.
And that's the guy that I got to set up the banquet, the first annual banquet.
Right, right.
After that, he ran the kitchen for a while. Then Al Johnson, the Fred State, decided he was an, and they won. And they took over.
But then he got it back, because I know when I joined in 48, he was there. That was the man. And then when we moved East Liberty, he was out there too.
Oh, this Williams is the guy, his wife. His wife had a restaurant
yeah,
on Frankstown.
Yeah, for Melody.
Yeah. And then when you took over out there, they still served the food.
Right.
But there was a man before him.
Okay.
Around, right after
okay.
the banquet,
okay.
this guy at the Georgia Catering had
okay.
And then
okay.
Fred Staten and Al Johnson,
yeah.
they was using their influence yeah. and they took over the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
the later stages, Williams.
Mr. Williams had it, because all we knew.
I knew his wife.
Yeah. Carolyn. No, no. That was his daughter, wasn't it? Because she married little Shorty, the trumpet player. Well, they was going together. You know little Shorty, the barber?
Oh, yeah.
Dallas?
Yeah, well, he went to Westinghouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might
yeah.
have been her daughter.
Yeah.
But see
okay.
how I knew her.
Yeah.
In my last years with the Board of Ed, she's a politician out there.
Okay.
They don't have wrestling no more.
No.
And I met her in Vermont.
Okay.
Because
okay.
she had a restaurant out there, you could get fried apples.
Oh, everything. Right. That was a place. Yeah.
Tree Inn. See?
Yeah, Jennings
yeah,
Tree Inn.
Yeah. I used to go out there
yeah.
in the room.
Yeah. Because Raymond used to play C Melody. Raymond Woods used to play C Melody, and he claims that he played around. Because there used to be a place. Farther out Frankstown, near Washington Boulevard, Frankstown, like a lobster house or some
Cottage Inn?
No. That's in Homewood. Now, this is right at Pittsburgh Hospital. Across the street. There used to be a restaurant thing there.
I remember when you
Yeah, because Raymond says that they used to play in there, but it was a white club.
I think it was the Gold Door. It became the Gold Door on the right-hand side going east,
yeah.
above Lincoln School, right up there near
yeah.
the corner from the Pittsburgh Hospital.
Right. It was in there.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else? How was Prez, you know, in terms of running the union?
Prez was illiterate. This is where
okay.
Ruby got in as Secretary of Treasury. Because in the Melendez Trust, they had to get
somebody could write.
And that's where Ruby comes in.
Okay.
Prez was just a figurehead from having been a member from way back.
Did you ever see a charter, or did you ever see anything that was supposed to be the charter of 471?
If it was, Melendez had it in his possession. And see, he was loose.
Yeah, okay.
And by the time they got into the club, he bowed out of it.
Right.
And if there was a charter, he had a son that played violin.
Okay.
And went to Duquesne and played violin with the boy Baldwin.
Okay.
And that's where the charter would be.
Yeah.
See, because the rest of them, like Ruby and all of them, they were Johnny come lately.
Yeah.
They didn't know about the
yeah, they, yeah,
charter.
Yeah, yeah,
but there
yeah.
was a charter.
Yeah.
But you'd have, and I guess all the Melendez families did,
yeah.
but his son might not even, see, that Puerto Rican might not even
yeah.
reside.
Yeah.
And Bill Graham was coming with a lot of
yeah.
second-hand
yeah, information.
Because, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he don't know.
Yeah. Because he's telling me that his father brought the union to Pittsburgh. And I know,
no,
according to my information,
we
had it here before.
I never knew nothing. See, he came out of Texas.
Yeah, right. He came out of Texas.
But before that, originally, they were in Canada.
Oh, the Gambrels.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And
okay.
they come in and went
right,
to Texas.
Right.
And then Texas here.
Right.
And he had a brother, Bill, had a brother named Seth, who was a mortician.
Right.
They
right.
went to Peabody High
School.
Seth died young.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
he was a promising mortician.
Right.
He was a little darker than Bill.
Okay.
And
well,
Bill Dick, side also went to be, but he was such a rabble rouser.
Yeah.
They sent him down to D.C. with Max and his sister, and he didn't finish Armstrong High School. He was just a cutter.
Yeah.
And his father before him was a cutter. He choked for one of the executives of the press. And he used to cover for the man. And at the funeral, right after the funeral, the man's wife fired him. Bill Eckstein Sr. fired him. And originally, they're from the north side.
From the north side?
Yeah. Bill Eckstein and Nene Walker, her first cousin.
Oh, okay.
And if you look at him, you can see the results, sure.
Yeah.
And Billy never did nothing locally in Pittsburgh. He made his pitch in D.C.
Yeah.
And when he come back here, they cleaned him up, bought him a suit.
Yeah.
He took a job at the Harlem Bar. He was only there about 8 days when the boys who he had worked with in Washington was the boy played drums was going higher named Rudy Traylor. They took over the Earl Hines band.
Right. And that was
and they sent for Billy. And his first hit was Jelly Jelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when he came he acted like he didn't know me. And we used to hang out and his father had an old Studebaker. And when he really got popular, the boys down the hill who used to feed him and all of that, they couldn't get too much of the white folks whisking them away in the pro-am, golf tournament, and he blows it off. June was the brain.
Yeah.
He was the goofball.
Yeah.
And when he married that girl,
that other girl,
Delora something out of Chicago, he had been married before to keep him fulfilling his obligation. He went over to southern France and stayed for about a year in the office financing all of his bills. And he was like Basie. He was indebted to the office.
Yeah, right.
Basie had to play until he died.
Right, to pay back
the game. Oh, by the way, I was talking to a boy named Johnson who went to school with Al Aaron, and this boy got his degree in music from Connecticut Tech. And he had a voice box. His name was Johnson. He didn't play jazz. And he was telling me this week, he said he was talking to Aaron's brother.
Bobby,
And he said that Aaron is in the studio making soundtracks for motion pictures. Well, he had that kind of a
He was doing it before, but then there was a little thing had come up, because when I was out there in 71, he was doing that kind of, because he was doing TV shows, he was doing Bacharach, and Harry Mancini and all that stuff, but then something had come up, and he had kind of lost that, but I'm glad to hear if he's doing it now.
Okay,
that's good.
And he was telling me about it, he said he talked to his brother, but that's maybe the cause.
Yeah. Well, I've been calling him and he doesn't return my calls.
You see, but they got a way of calling it up.
I remember
him and Johnson and Tony Pasquarelli.
Right.
They were students in Westinghouse when I was working there.
Right.
And I worked the night turn, but I'd come out early enough to hear the auditorium performance.
Yeah.
Pasquarelli was older than
me. Yeah, right.
And Pasquarelli was the first one to hire black musicians when they got shows like Ice Capade. Because Billy Lewis, he hired him, and Billy said, Kurt, when he told me, he said, I went on to school and said, he didn't believe it, it was irate. And Billy made off when he had that concession.
Right. Because he was a major contractor here.
Yeah.
And I missed out by being hired, by working with Joe Marone.
Yeah.
Then, you know, and Pasquale wouldn't hire me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got connected with Jack Purcell. And then, because they have a funny thing, they don't like to share people.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You and my sister.
That's the way it goes.
So Kevin stayed with him anymore. And you will be able to open the door. Because we'll take it any more.
Yeah.
And now, if you can't read, you ain't
no it doesn't work.
It don't work.
Yeah.
And I'm glad to see somebody. Well, you take like a bunch of boys up here.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. I heard a lot about him when I did get to here. He didn't show me nothing. He didn't show me as much as Squirrel. He just had a reputation.
Well, that's it, because some of the guys are still living in 1945, because of whatever was going on at that time. you know, but it's, things are different now.
Yeah. You got to go all of it. And this is why I look at Georgia and his nephews and all of that. See, I know that they all went through the course of study to be able to do this. Like Joe Harrison, don't like Joe.
Right.
But I have to give the devil his due.
Yeah, right. That's it.
And he wanted paid for what he did, just like this Pat Mitchell. Me and him were talking, he said, "Kurt, I'm tired." I said, "Don't let her know that you know me." I said, "The same thing she did with me. I wasn't looking for nothing. Went to update so they could come out with the right information. When they got ready to make it public, here's Frank Bowman with his check poked out, and he don't know nothing about anything." And it's all wrong that I got somebody like Walt Harkin that never played with nobody. Like, oh, they never been out of town, never did nothing. And gonna tell people about Ruben says he had sons and stuff. And she said, "Kurt, I got the record. How did she come out? Have you talked with her?"
Well, no, she rewrote it. Okay. I talked to her this morning. After you talked to her.
Well, they haven't made the award yet.
No, it's the 24th, I believe, or the 24th.
Where is it going to be done? Up there at that lab at the Martin Luther King Library?
No, I think it's at, I don't know where it's
going. I'm going to be there sitting in the first row to look at it.
Yeah, but she said she couldn't, she had to cut it, you know, cut it way down. I said, because it ain't nothing but a bunch of garbage. I mean, it's got a whole lot of stuff on there that you know, didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know?
And just like I told you, he didn't know nothing about no Linton Garner. And he can't tell me nothing about Oliver Farrell, and another boy played, William Muldrow, played bass. He became an educator in the Southern school system and at one of them colleges. Those were the musicians. Before that, there was Billy Williams, Ghost Howe, and then they were the musicians. And they didn't get into it until 28. When it becomes part of the public school curriculum. Because if you didn't have no money to buy E-flat alto, they were playing C melodies, and a lot of them don't know. I know how Leroy Brown and Honey Boy got their start, and since they were the first people to got all the gigs. These people don't know that. Chuck, don't worry about it. Anything you want to know, Chris Hawkins was a guy would go down to Volkwine and buy 50 stock numbers and stomp up tape with it.
Because
all that they did was legit. The jazz didn't start happening until in the middle 20s. And then they're going to get around and tell Horace ought to be ashamed of himself. Well, we know how it goes.
And it's one of them things, you know, that... But it's okay when Stony was there a lot of younger guys, you know, when they started a club, was there a lot of young musicians, you know?
No, what happened? And old heads like Berkeley, Lonnie Fisher, and he got in. Blocked out the young boys like Jerry Elliott and them.
Okay.
When I was going out, they was just beginning
coming
to come in.
Because
had I been there, had they come in earlier, I could have guided them But when I left, then they told them to the, and then they were envious of them boys because they could read and could play.
Well, what did Lonnie did he do? I thought he was like an entertainer.
He was, but during the war and when all the boys were in the service, he got in on the executive, Burford and all of them, come in and took over.
How'd he get a card?
They gave it to him because he loafed around and would play and them, just like yours children. How did he get a card? Me and him was pretty close. He come to me, he said, "Kurt, they don't want..." I used to play bass drum with Benny Moore. But what's the real story?
Well, I thought he played trombone.
He ain't played nothing.
Well, that's what he told me, because
he was with the carnival, but he was an acrobat. They taught him how to, and he was small and stout, and he could tumble and do all of those things. They think I don't know. Yeah, he was an acrobat. and was a great politician and a waiter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But to go on with Ruby,
right.
When the club, when they merged, he didn't, Honey Boy couldn't fulfill the job because he wanted to be competitive and play. And she didn't want the job, and they put George Gilbert in there. I know.
I'm fine.
You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
I know this.
Because see, because Claude Fisher, Lonnie Fisher was the one that, he was my contact with Irvin C. Miller when I went with the Carnival
the
first year. Yeah,
he was.
Yeah, because that's...
And he wasn't original Pittsburgh, but when they had the Star Theater,
okay.
Which had Vaudeville, it was lucrative.
Right.
Some people got tired of the rod like Lemon Moses.
Right, right.
They dropped off right here in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
Old Man Lemon Moses.
Okay, right. I know you're talking about now.
He was the father of J.C.
Moses. Right.
Rudy Moses was the dancer.
Yeah.
Lena was the sister who was in the candy field.
Right.
Okay. The big car is here. Yeah.
You know, and it's funny when... You know, when you start talking about, things come to you,
mm-hmm.
You know, when you start talking about that. And you just phased yourself out like the end of the 70s, huh? 47.
Yeah. After I fought so hard to get Tony in.
Yeah.
He looked like he wanted to ignore me and go for the toast.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if you want the true story, if you ever run into Duke Spaulding, he'll tell you about
it.
Duke was down there.
Right, yeah. Because I remember my early days, I remember Malinas was the president when I joined in 48. You know, he was the president.
He was the secretary. Yeah.
I remember
that.
But then, right after that,
he pulled up the stake.
Because I remember Frederick Burks, I think was on the board.
Yeah, he was Frederick became the business agent.
Business agent, right.
And he insisted when we got Tony in, we wanted him to get rid of Farrell because he was stealing all the money and he wouldn't do it. And then Tony lost.
Right. That's when, and shortly, either it was right after we got to East Liberty or just before we got to East Liberty, because Carl Otto was the president,
mm-hmm.
And I don't recall, I think he was in for two terms, I believe,
mm-hmm.
and then Joe Wester became president.
You remember when Ducky was the business agent?
Yeah, and that was at the club.
Yeah, well, you know what happened?
Yeah.
Ducking was so busy taking the pack of money, entertaining the left with an accident, was just coming along, partying and drinking.
Right.
And Ray Jackson, who was the area supervisor, come through and run an audit on the books. Ducky had to sell that $1,000 set to Stephen.
Right.
Five said he had. Plus, if people had to help to pay off.
To make up some money. Right.
Yeah, to pay off. See, he was a kleptomaniac.
Yeah.
A known thief.
Yeah.
But the groovy got a new job with the typewriter repair company, and he got fired and off the ceiling. He wrote the Frank Cedars with Nate Harper.
Yeah.
He got fired from that.
And he was working at the VA. When he worked at the VA for a while?
Yeah, but I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't either, yeah. But I remember him being up there. And then I remember that was the problem because they had supposedly that break-in where the glass was laying on the outside of the building. Somebody was supposed to have broken into the building, so. Yeah, right.
He was extremely
kind.
Him or Jesse didn't even get into music. If I hadn't had a lot of people love more.
Yeah.
At WPA band, Andy was the musical director, but I was the brain
behind
the repertoire.
Right.
Because at that time I was studying, Billy Lewis was studying, and we were together. Demanded that they get music so that we could apply the knowledge that we acquired.
Well, was it an all black band at that time?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was all the way to go, yeah.
And you know what? The only reason the guy who I was studying with, I was trying to get into Tiffany, and tiny girl like who was a temple, things was opening up, and he left. He said, "Kurt, don't you know if they knew you had any knowledge of Tiffany, they would have drafted you away from the jazz band to play Tiffany in the concert band." And they never knew that.
Well, when did Trigger come around here?
Brenda went to Shannon, and he was one of them guys that was just Miss Baker, who was my reporter.